We look to the USA for our first story today, as we haven't really had an opportunity yet this week to talk about one of the first moves that Donald Trump has made from the Oval Office, namely his decision to reinstate the Mexico City policy. And despite its name, no, it's not about that wall. This is an agreement that actually dates back to the early 1980s and to the Ronald Reagan presidency. And ever since his presidency, each successive Democratic president has revoked it, only to have the following Republican successor reinstated. That is what has happened again this time. Donald Trump reinstating what is known as the global gag rule or the Mexico City policy. And what does that policy do? Well, effectively, it prevents the channeling of any funding from the US government to any international NGO which either performs abortions itself or promotes them as a tool as part of a family planning arsenal of information. Now, to talk to us about what this means and about its potential ramifications for us in South Africa, I'm delighted to welcome on the line with me Advocate Bronwyn Pithy, who is an attorney with the Women's Legal Center. It's wonderful to have you with us, Bronwyn. Welcome.
Thanks very much, Pippa. Hi.
Hi there. Now, let's just start with some international opinion on this this decision. I know the Vice President of Marie Stopes International has called the move catastrophic, saying that women in developing countries are going to pay the price, and they're going to pay that price in unwanted pregnancies, in unsafe abortions, and possibly even in deaths of mother and child. Do you share her concerns?
Well, yes, I think that those are very real concerns, especially because the women that will be affected are probably going to be from developing countries where services to women are compromised generally. And unfortunately, a lot of women don't have control over their reproductive rights. So the consequences are that organizations, just to go a little further than what you're saying, is that even organizations that use funding from another source to actually provide terminations, if they receive any funding from the U.S. government, they won't be, continue to receive that funding. So even if the funding from the U.S. isn't used directly for the terminations, that funding will be stopped.
So even if that was just being used on contraception programs, for example?
Exactly. And I think that's one of the biggest concerns that organizations such as Marie Stopes and Planned Parenthood International, is that even if they were to say, okay, the American or the U.S. funding won't be used directly for it, but they will use their funding for contraception and other healthcare instances, they will still have their funding from the U.S. terminated.
So what is, the practical implication of that for us here in South Africa? I'm told that of the direct aid that we received from the U.S. last year, something like 90% of it was spent on healthcare in general. Do we have a sense of how much of that was specifically going to women's healthcare issues, including abortion and access to contraception?
I actually don't, but I think what Maurice Stopes have alluded to, that it really is an extraordinary amount of money. The U.S. government funds and certainly budgets for a very large amount of money to go into foreign countries for that purpose. And there's no doubt that South Africa benefits greatly from the funding that comes from the U.S. Mm-hmm. And in the last instance, when there was a Republican president in the form of Mr. Bush, a lot of that funding was cut, and the consequences were catastrophic, mainly again in Africa and South America.
Of course, and it's not just South Africa. I know I've seen already voices crying out from East Africa in particular, saying that it could be millions of women whose reproductive choices are essentially taken away from them as a result of this. Let me just play devil's advocate a little bit here. There are some who argue that this isn't about choice to have an abortion or not have an abortion if you choose, but rather this is about choice for American taxpayers, that they have the choice not to see their tax dollars being spent on a process that some of them abhor. How would you respond to that argument?
Well, you see, I think that does get into a moral judgment. It does get into a moral issue. None of us have the direct control over what happens to our taxes. The U.S. at the moment, it depends what Mr. Trump decides to do. At the moment, termination of pregnancy is legal in the U.S. So there is nothing wrong legally with tax dollars being used to promote and to assist other countries that follow that particular particular trend. You know, there's nowhere in the world where you can say, I will pay my tax rand or my tax dollar only if that amount funds the things that I support. Or is given to other countries if I support it. So that seems to be quite an arbitrary way of deciding whether tax money can be used or not. You know, America has for many years been seen as an international donor for a lot of things, for the development of a lot of areas in the world. And I mean, that's to be appreciated. One cannot just dismiss that as something irrelevant and insignificant. So a lot of countries and developing countries obviously benefit from that. And to suddenly have a situation where a moral position takes over and has consequences like this is, I think people are using the words inhumane.
Bowman, we know that there was, before this even happened, there's been huge concern from women in America. We saw them turning out in their thousands and hundreds of thousands for that march last Saturday. The picture of Trump and his surrounding men signing this Mexico City policy back into existence has done the rounds. A lot of people finding just that image alone very distasteful of a group of seven older white men signing a document with such crucial impact for women's choices. Do you think we're going to see pushback against this in the USA? And if so, what form might that take? Is there any way to contest this decision?
Well, I'm not sure in terms of American policy how, you know, how available recourse is in terms of an executive order from the president. I'm not sure on their processes. But look, I also don't think this should come as massive surprise to people. I think that people have been anticipating this. You know, when you have a presidential candidate who says that women deserve some form of punishment for abortion, you know, which is what one of his campaign slogans was. And when you have, there is a Republican lawmaker at the moment who said that, you know, if he has the opportunity, he will criminalize abortion, which will force women to be more responsible for their sexual behavior. You know, if that's the kind of sentiment that is going on in the U.S., I have no doubt that there will be a lot of work and advocacy done to fulfill that position. But I also see, I mean, obviously with the marches, there are some incredibly well organized and strong women's organizations that I think will definitely push back in a very big way. Of course, funding is going to be needed, but I think there seems to be a lot of commitment to protecting those rights. There really does seem to be a fundamental lack of understanding, very clearly in America and probably elsewhere in the world, that abortion is not used as a form of birth control. I think that often is seen to be a lazy way of dealing with one's reproductive health. And it certainly isn't. You know, women to a large extent don't have control over whether they are able to have safe sex or not. It's difficult to negotiate those things. There are a lot of women who are subjected to very serious sexual violence. So for that to be an option is a vital way of keeping women within the economy, within education systems. And if you don't have that as an option around reproductive health, you really are ignoring the reality of most women in the world, particularly women who are socioeconomically disadvantaged.